Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bribe or fine dine? This is SN Fresen. It's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the SN Fresen show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife. And boy, have we got a show lined up for you. I'll be chatting to Vicky De Beer, the author of Clever Cooking, as well as we'll be chatting to Amy Klitzer of What You Want to Eat fame, and Naomi Nachman, one of my New York faves, and she'll be sharing, I suppose, some recipes for her Purim Sudah, and Amy will be sharing some wonderful Homentashen recipes. I know she does really funky different ones, so stay tuned for these lovely recipes. There are also some lovely recipes in this month's Jewish Life for Purim. So get your free copy and try out those lovely new recipes. It's been a very busy week, experimenting, trying new cuts of meat, new recipes. I'm putting on a demonstration in 2 weeks' time on Wednesday, the 26th of February. So if anybody wants to attend this, it will be at 7 o'clock at night. It won't be a late night, but it will be a fun night with some free gifts. And I promise you it won't be too late. So if you want to, you can contact me on sclurie@gmail.com. S for sugar, C for Carol, Lurie, L-U-R-I-E, @gmail.com. And put your name down for a fun evening.
Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bribe or fine dine? This is SN Fresen. It's all about the food.
You're back with me, Sharon Lurie, on the SN Fresen show. And I have to talk to you about a wonderful recipe I tried. My daughter came home and she said, "Ma, you've got to try this recipe. It is incredible." So it was for bread. So, of course, I did try it and it is incredible. She works for a lodge in Kenya. And they've produced a book entitled Out of an African Kitchen. And this book contains recipes from the kitchen of Angama Reserve in Kenya and has really the most wonderful recipes. It's a magnificent place to go. It's a 7-star+. But let me give you the recipe, then you can have a little taste of Kenya. 1 cup of sunflower seeds, 1/2 cup of flax seeds or linseeds, 1/2 cup of chopped almonds, 1.5 cups of rolled oats, 2 tablespoons of chia seeds, 4 tablespoons of psyllium husk seeds or 3 tablespoons of psyllium husk powder, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon of syrup or honey, 3 tablespoons of coconut oil, or if you want to go the milchic route, melted butter, and 1.5 cups of water. All you do is you combine all the seeds together, the nuts, the oats, the psyllium husk, and the salt until it's all mixed very well. Whisk together the syrup or the honey, whatever you're using, coconut oil and water. And add this to the dry ingredients and mix very well until all the ingredients are soaked. So if your coconut oil is hard, you'll need to melt it in the microwave or on the stovetop because you want it to be liquid in form. Then you place it in an oiled loaf pan and you leave it out, covered obviously, for at least 2 hours so that all those seeds and all the nuts and everything can absorb the coconut oil and the water. And you can leave it overnight. In fact, they say preferably overnight or all day covered so that it really absorbs all the ingredients. You preheat the oven to 180 degrees. And you bake the loaf for 20 minutes. Then turn it out, put it upside down in the same loaf pan. and you bake that, or you can actually put it onto an oven rack, because now it's got its shape, and you can put it on an oven rack and you leave it for another 30 to 40 minutes. Then you allow it to cool completely before slicing. And this bread freezes so well. And we had it with chopped liver. It's absolutely delicious. Another recipe from the same book is watermelon sorbet. And I think this is is wonderful for Friday night after we've had that heavy meal. We can have this watermelon sorbet, which is served with a fruit carpaccio. So it would be like pineapple carpaccio. What we would do is you take a handful of mint, roughly chopped, 3 tablespoons of caster sugar. You may need a little bit more caster sugar depending on the size of your pineapple. 2 limes zested and juiced. 1 pineapple peeled and sliced as thinly as you can. You can use a mandolin for this. You'll also need 1 mango peeled, pitted and finely sliced. 6 passion fruit or granadilla if you want, with the pulp scooped out, and a couple of fresh basil leaves. And then what you do is you take your pineapple, and as I say, you cut it as thinly as possible, and you make this mint and sugar by placing the mint into a mortar and add the caster sugar, and you ground it with the pestle and grind it down until the sugar actually turns green. You add the lime zest and the juice. You fan the pineapple slices on a plate. And then you put the mango on top. And you put the passion fruit on top of that, or the granadilla. And then you generously sprinkle this with the mint sugar. And then you scatter a couple of basil leaves on top. And you serve it with this watermelon sorbet. Now let me tell you how to make the watermelon sorbet. You'll need 5 cups of finely diced seedless watermelon, 3 limes juiced, 4 sprigs of fresh mint, you'll pull the leaves off the mint, 1 cup of sugar, and you blend the watermelon with 1/2 lime juice until it's smooth. So you can use a liquidizer or you can use a hand blender. And then you set this aside. You set the watermelon and the lime juice aside. And in a small saucepan, you combine the mint, the sugar, and the remaining lime juice. You bring it to the boil over medium heat, reduce the heat, and leave it to simmer for 5 minutes, stirring occasionally. You allow it to cool, and you strain the minted juice into the watermelon puree. And either you churn it in an ice machine, or once you've mixed it well with a blender again, you freeze it for about 2 hours. Then you can blend it again with your hand blender until it's smooth. Then you put it back in the freezer, and after about 2 or 3 hours again, you take it out and you blend it again. The more you blend it, the more velvety it will become. The more you blend it, the more you break down all those the ice. The icicles in the sorbet, so you get a lovely, creamy, almost watermelon sorbet. You can do this again if you want, if you find that the last time you did it wasn't as smooth as you wanted it to be. And that, I hope, is on everybody's table this Friday night, because we've got to use up our watermelons because they're going to go out of season soon. So are our mangoes. So let's have a wonderful watermelon sorbet for dessert.
Khalashing for khalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Hi, Vicky. It's wonderful talking to somebody who loves to be prepared, just like I do. And this book, your book called Clever Cooking, really made me sit up and take notice. And so, the title of your book says it all. So, tell me how Clever Cooking came about.
Well, it's actually been quite a long trip to this book. You know, my son Luca was diagnosed with diabetes when he was 8 years old. And I had to start pre-prepping our meals just to keep our weeks calm and his blood sugar more stable. So that was many years ago. And I just more and more started to do some meal prep and some planning and so forth. And then about 5 years ago, we moved to the Netherlands, of all places. And then suddenly I was faced with a tiny kitchen. You know, we're so lucky and blessed in South Africa with nice space, especially in our kitchens. I realized that there's more to meal prep when you don't have all the space and big fizz and you know, nice big gas hobs and things like that. You not only had to plan your meals, but you also had to plan your space and, you know, timing in the oven, because it's a tiny oven, you know, things like that. So that's where Clever Cooking came about, where I realized that, you know, you have to have something on the hob, something in the oven, something that can simmer on its own. Otherwise, you know, you won't be able to do meal prep in a smaller space.
Yes. And what have you found to be the advantages of meal prepping? You know, because I know so often we sort of come home and we go, oh, what are we going to make tonight? Now, and meal prepping would just be so much easier for all of us. And
well, for us, it's all about the health aspect of it. Because what I found was, if we don't have time to cook in the evenings, we tend to grab the carbs. You know, it's the pasta and the rice that cooks quickly. Because, you know, if you get home at, you know, 5 or 6 and you want dinner on the table by 7 or 7, whatever, there's no time to do a long cooked, slow cooked stew or something that's hearty and nourishing. You go for the quick things. And also, you tend to be more dependable on pre-made things, pre-made sauces, packets and things like that, to make it quick, and tin things and canned things. And there's nothing wrong with that. But in the long run, those things all contain extra salt, extra sugar, preservatives, colorants. So for us to For me, it's very important to do clean eating for my family. And clean eating basically means cooking your own food. Then you know exactly what goes in there. And for me to get that right and, you know, work in the day, I had to start my bolognese on a Saturday and cook it nice and slow. And then I have it in the fridge for a quick aubergine bake, or to make a quick cottage pie and things like that. So that was just how my mind worked. Yes. And it was the main thing for us was to not have these hidden sugars and hidden preservatives in the food, because, you know, we could immediately see if something had, even if it was supposedly a good meal, but it was a pre-made meal, and then Luca's blood sugar would just spike. Because there was hidden starches in there, sugars that they don't really, they tell you the carb count is low, and then once you eat it, it just spikes his blood sugar. So we completely started to avoid foods like that.
You know, it's actually amazing. As soon as you said bolognese, it reminded me a few weeks ago we went away and I had to prepare some meals. And I just took a huge batch of mince, turned it into cottage pie, spaghetti bolognese. I think I even did some curry pies with it. I did some a Thai mince as well, with some 2 minute noodles. And it's amazing how far this packet of mince went.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's also good for your budget, you know. If you have to buy every single meal, everything, and the cooking time and the electricity it takes to cook all these meals separately, it's time. It's also time management. So it's your time, it's your budget, and it's your health. So there's three really good reasons to do meal prepping.
And you also talk a lot about freezing stuff. And obviously you were saying that you don't have much space to freeze. So would you cook sauces and keep them in the fridge for a longer period, and then just be able to add like a beautiful rich tomato sauce to your mince, or, you know, to a dish?
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. What I do, I have a few in the book. There's a few recipes for like a curry cooking sauce and a tomato cooking sauce, which I then freeze in either food blocks because we don't have a lot of space. And also I don't have a lot of space to have a huge range of plastic and glass containers to put food in.
Yes.
So what I would do is I make a very flavorful tomato cooking sauce and I freeze it in a glass bowl, then tip it out and then I can use the glass bowl again and then wrap that in glad wrap or put that in a zip seal bag. So I call it my food blocks.
Yes.
And then that I just pop out and pop into a pot and it defrosts very quickly directly from the freezer. And then I have a beautiful flavorful tomato base.
Yes.
Which can really become anything. I can quickly then make a bolognese with that in half the time.
Yeah.
Or I can make a, you know, add some stock and make a nice tomato soup. I mean, the it's just for me, the cooking sauces, what I've realized, just to get back to the point of what we do for meal prepping, is that, you know, you on the internet and the specific on TikTok and Instagram, you get lots of these meal preppers that show you hundreds of individual little meals that they pack in containers and then freeze. And
yes.
I did try that at some stage and it didn't work for us because, you know, you don't, you get bored with the same meal. And
sure.
Those individual meals, I started throwing away. Nobody wanted to heat them up. So for me, it's better to meal prep for the food as a family. And I do that by doing some time-saving things like making a curry cooking sauce that can become a very quick chicken curry or even a fish curry on a weekday. Mm-hmm. And even freezing my flavor pastes. Like I have a Thai flavor paste and a curry flavor paste, a Moroccan flavor paste, which mm-hmm. I freeze in little ice cube containers and then just also pop them out and put them in Ziploc bags. And then for me, that is a time saver because now I don't have to chop chili and onion, chili and garlic and ginger in the evening. So
right.
Some things are a complete meal, which sometimes I'm so thankful to have a nice bone broth or a nice bolognese in the fridge or the freezer.
Yes.
And other times I just need to save time with a few clever tricks.
And it's actually, I love Ziploc bags because I find them flat, they're easy to put in the freezer, and you can just sort of like flip through them and see what sauces you've got. And then you can always add, like I find that if I make a tomato sauce, I always add a fresh herb to it on the nut. You know, defrost the tomato
yeah. And
add fresh herbs to it. And then it doesn't...
Yes, and that just lifts it up. You know,
yeah,
it's a gorgeous idea.
Yeah, doesn't taste so sort of freezer-ish.
Especially basil and things like that. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, and I love how you put in a little bit about load shedding. So you obviously have family here.
Absolutely. So I know all about, and we still had load shedding when we were there. So
yes.
It's definitely a reality for all of us. And I mean, anything can happen. Even here in the Netherlands, sometimes we have power outages. So it's not just restricted to South Africa. It happens far less,
yes.
But it does happen. And yeah, we must take that in consideration with our timing.
Yeah. If I had to open your pantry this afternoon, what would I find there? What is a staple in your cupboard?
Yeah, I always have some tinned tomatoes, Italian tomatoes,
yes.
Or a nice Italian sugo, you know, tomato sauce.
Yes.
I always have coconut cream or coconut milk in the cupboard for curries.
Yes.
And I love using it like in a pumpkin soup. My fresh produce, will always find ginger, garlic, and chilies in my kitchen. And the rest, I really try to just keep fresh. Eh? I have my spices that I make my masalas with and my curries. And then we basically focus on protein as our main focus, because also that's something that keeps Luca's blood sugar under control.
Yes.
And then just our fresh fruit and veggies. So I don't have a lot of things in my pantry. We try not to eat carbohydrates, so I don't have a lot of pastas and rice and things like that.
Yeah.
But I always have some risotto rice in the pantry for a quick risotto for a treat night and things like that. But yeah, I try to keep it as fresh as possible and focus on the protein. So many of the recipes in the book are protein-focused curries and stews and comfort foods and things like that that form the basis of our meals for the week.
You also use some buttermilk in some of your recipes. If I had to keep a dairy-free, what would you suggest I use instead for buttermilk?
I would then use coconut milk. I think coconut milk, just pure unsweetened, unflavored coconut milk, is one of the safest milk alternatives.
Yeah,
if you start using things like almond milk and oat milk and those things, I mean, it's really, those things contain so many hidden sugars and also harmful seed oils. So I would stay clear of that if possible. For buttermilk, try coconut milk. It doesn't have the same, obviously the same sourness, but it at least has the same thickness.
You're right. If there was something that you couldn't live without in your kitchen, in your small kitchen, what would it be?
Like a food item or equipment?
A nice utensil, nice plant.
A nice utensil.
Or plants.
Gee, I wonder.
A whisk,
appliance must definitely be my Magimix food processor.
Yes.
I've put everything in there. It's such a lifesaver. It's such a time saver, you know, to just put everything in there for sauces and soups and things like that. And even chop up veggies very quickly for me. I use it a lot. Actually, I burnt through one already. It's my second one. And then just my chef's knife, you know, my chopping knife. I love a good chef's knife, and I use it every day.
And tell me, what's trending in Amsterdam at the moment, food-wise?
Oh, food-wise? That's an interesting question. I think the ramen shops are really popping up. Ramen with good broth. It took a while to get here, but now suddenly every town and every city gets their own ramen shops and really excellent ramen, you know, with good stocks and broths and things like that. So that's quite exciting.
Yes.
And then there's just a few like boutique cookie stores that open up, you know, that's really just one store making one cookie or one biscuit, and people are literally lining the streets to buy these little bespoke biscuits and cookies for an arm and a leg. I can't believe what they pay. But it's beautifully packaged and it's very trendy, very sort of TikTok-y, you know. So there's a few of that popping up. But I think the Asian influence with the ramen houses are actually the biggest thing that I've noticed recently.
Very interesting. So, Vicky, we are running out of time, so I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining me, and I will be sharing one or two recipes from your book with lovely sauces with my audience. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Okay, be well.
Okay, bye.
Chalashing for Chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome to the show, Naomi. Lovely to have you on air again.
Hi, it's so nice to talk to you and to everyone. How are you?
We're all good here, and we're very excited because Purim is around the corner. And no one better than Naomi to take us through Purim this year. So, what have you
Purim,
got
this
up
one
your
is a
sleeve?
Hard one, hey?
It is going to be a hard one.
Well, it falls out like the fast is Thursday, going Megillah readings Thursday night, and then Friday is Erev Shabbat of Purim. So I'm thinking, what are we going to do for the Seudah? Like, are we doing milchiks? Are we doing fleishiks? Nobody wants to be fleishiks Erev Shabbos and then have big Friday night dinner. Like, you know, so I was thinking, like, would it be crazy to do dairy? Like a dairy Purim Seudah? Like, everyone always does these big, gorgeous meat meals, but we could do dairy.
We could.
What are your thoughts on that? What does everyone think about dairy?
I have thought of dairy.
You could do like a whole Israeli theme. You could do malawach with different sauces and toppings and berekas and cheeses. You could make a cheese board, like sushi. I mean, that's a whole different thing, but you could every event now has kosher sushi at it, so you know, from pizza stores to high-end restaurants. So you could do sushi, like you could just make it like milchik. Would that be so crazy?
I don't think so. We can actually have butter on our challah. Oh, that would be delicious.
Oh, my God. Now you're killing me. This is the butter is the best, right? I love butter. And I love the dairy. You could do different pizzas.
Yeah. And, of course, the best would be some delicious ice cream.
Right. There you go. You can do an ice cream sundae bar.
Lovely.
And you can do milky commentation. You could do milky commentation.
Yeah, there you go.
Put butter in your dough. There will be nothing like it. It will be so flaky.
It would be delicious. Oh, and we can have the cheese and we can really go to town.
And then, yeah, I think that's a very good idea. Dairy.
And then a light Shabbos meal afterwards.
Right, so you don't have to have a heavy Shabbos meal. Yeah. Or if you eat your meal earlier on in the day, a brunch seudah, then you're ready by dinner time. What time in South Africa is Shabbat come in this time of the year?
6:15-ish. Yeah.
Oh, so we're still in the fives. We're in that in-between season time, you know?
Yes.
You're going into winter and we're going into summer.
Correct.
Right?
Curry.
So it's the in-between time. So, you know, no one has that crazy early or crazy late. So you can definitely have probably a regular seudah meal following your Purim seudah.
And how are we going to do the shalach monas?
Oh, I'm going to do challah and dips. That's my go-to when it falls out on a Friday. Like, I'm going to make a big giant batch of hummus, and I'm going to get little tiny mason jars, and I'm going to put it in the mason jars and wrap it with a little, a medium-sized challah. Beautiful. I feel like everyone's going to do that, but you can never have enough homemade challah.
Exactly.
Especially.
My freezer is literally stocked up. It's amazing that no matter how many I freeze, I still enjoy making fresh.
Yeah, I know. So what we have in our neighborhood is somebody collects everybody's frozen challahs, she wraps them beautifully, and she redistributes them to widows.
Oh, what a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's very nice. I know. She has a very nice idea.
A lot of
It's called Bowie Challah.
Okay. I know a lot of communities here make challah. I know the Deal Link give out challah. And you know, there's lots of communities that do that as well here, which I think is beautiful.
And everybody knows how to make challah from the Shabbos Project, which started in South Africa.
Correct. And also, I just find I really enjoy making a brocha on my challah. So I really make a lot of dough. So, as you say, a lot goes into the freezer. Good idea. Right. You should get some people on that list.
it's a really nice idea, and I'll give it to my neighbours. I know I get a stockpile every once in a while of challahs, but I feel like Purim, people are going to eat a lot of bread probably people are going to have a nice big meal on Friday night also. They'll kind of... Purim festivities will spill over into Shabbos, and people, I know I'm going to have company Friday night for dinner.
Yes. I must say, it's a day that we are not going to diet, everybody out there. We are not going bread-free that Friday or Shabbos.
Or Hamantaschen-free. We're going to eat a lot of Hamantaschen.
Exactly. Well, it's once again, it is beautiful and wonderful to talk to you, Naomi. And
likewise.
And to just get a lovely New York flow to this radio show.
A New York flow with an Australian accent.
Correct.
I tell people, speak American with an Aussie accent.
Oh, lovely to chat to you. And
nice to talk to you. Purim Sameach.
Purim Sameach to you. And soon we'll be on to Pesach.
Pesach, that's my favorite subject to talk about. So when you're ready, you can call me back.
I'll call you then. Okay, take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Challashing for challahs? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and I'm coming live from the studio. Next on the list, we get hold of Amy Kritzner, and she's going to share some of her lovely Hommentaschen recipes with us. She really does make some funky ones that we can enjoy together. Hi, Amy, and welcome to the show. Lovely to have you.
Thank you so much.
Where am I talking to you? In California?
I'm in San Francisco.
San Francisco.
California.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the lady who makes the funky Hommentaschen, tell us what you're making this year.
You know, I haven't even quite finalized my recipes this year. I have so many recipes going back in like the 15 years I've been blogging. I decided first I want to make some videos for some of my older recipes that I feel like people aren't as familiar with. One of my older recipes that is always very popular on my blog, but like maybe people don't know about on social media, is a strawberry champagne Hommentaschen. So it's a funfetti dough. The filling is strawberry, and then it has a champagne drizzle on it. So I think in trying to get more exposure to that one, I was going to do a video for that. Then I'm working on some savory ideas too that I haven't quite nailed down. Either some kind of faux crab rangoon I'm thinking of, maybe something involving pickles, because I've done some viral pickle recipes for latkes and for some dips and that kind of thing. People always seem to really love anything with a pickle in it. But I haven't come up with like another unique sweet one yet that I'm like in love with. So I decided to kind of revisit some of my older favorites first.
Okay. So what are some of your older favorites? Share those.
So yeah, the strawberry champagne one. I have one, a halva Hommentaschen that I really love too, that I think is always a winner. Let's see, I did a Neapolitan one. It's a strawberry dough with chocolate filling and a vanilla drizzle. I did some one that's probably like 10, 15 years ago, you could come up with red velvet, mint chocolate, and like no one's ever done that before. And now whenever I come up with a new idea, I Google it and like someone's come up with it more recently. So it's harder to come up with unique ideas. And I try to come up with things that people haven't done before. So that's kind of a goal of mine that's getting harder and harder as there's more people creating recipes and more content on the internet. And I also kind of try to do some savory Hommentaschen too. So I did one that was a pita and hummus one. I did a shakshuka one. So the pita and hummus was like a triangle shaped pita stuffed with hummus, and it was warm, which I think is kind of nice. And the shakshuka one was kind of a similar kind of pita shaped triangle filled with like tomato and a runny egg. That was really good. But probably my most popular savory one was a bialy Hommentaschen. So it was kind of a savory dough filled with caramelized onions and poppy seeds and all that good stuff in the middle. So those, and those, with some cream cheese too. So kind of all the, are you familiar with bialys?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I feel like some people are like, oh yeah, bialy, I like even better than a bagel. And some people are like, what's that? So always okay, trying to make sure.
Explain to my audience what a bialy is. Cause we don't really get them here in South Africa. They're very popular in America, but, explain to them what it is.
So yeah, similar to a bagel, it doesn't have a hole and it's not boiled. But it's kind of a similar dough. And then instead of where the hole is, there's like this caramelized onion, not really always caramel, like onion, poppy seed, garlic mixture. They're just really great. And you can top them the same way as a bagel with cream cheese, and they're a New York staple. So I've always loved them, and they're a little harder to find than bagels, and definitely hard to find a good one.
You're right. And I actually made some not so long ago, and they weren't too bad. I have to try them on my American family to get their reaction.
Good. Yeah, I think they're easier to make than bagels, I think, because you don't have to do the boiling and everything. But I love them.
That onion gave it a really wonderful taste. But I've been experimenting a lot with savory Hommentaschen, especially because
Purim falls on a Friday. So, you know, we have to do the Sudah and then we go into Shabbos. So it's a lot of eating.
Like most Jewish holidays, it's a lot of eating or fasting and then eating. But exactly. I love the idea of like a whole meal of hamantaschen too. Last year I did spinach artichoke dip hamantaschen. I really liked that. That didn't go as... wasn't quite as popular as I expected, but I liked it. So yeah, I'm definitely going to work on, I have a savory and a sweet tooth, but I definitely like the savory hamantaschen as well.
Yeah. I found that once I have something sweet, I've got to have something savory. Once I have something savory, exactly. I've got to have something
me
sweet.
Me too. I'm the same way. And I've experimented too with, you know, on Purim, you're supposed to imbibe a little. So I've experimented with some boozy hamantaschen too. Last year I did an Aperol Spritz version, which I thought came out really great. So I might make that again. And then I did, I think it was the year before, I did an espresso martini hamantaschen, which also was really tasty. So maybe I'll look at some boozy inspiration for my sweet one this year too. That's a good idea.
That's a very good idea. I think I'm going to go back into my kitchen. I'm going to get some lovely onions. I'm going to put in some lovely red wine, and I'm going to cook that and put that into, I don't know, something savory.
That sounds really good, too. I love that.
So there's your boozy and there's your savory.
Yeah, that's boozy and savory. Okay. That's a good idea.
Okay, use it.
No, that's yours.
Anyway, it was lovely to chat to you, and thank you for joining me tonight.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
And it was great getting inspired for Purim. And
you helped inspire me a little too, so I'm a little behind this year.
So, and what are you going to do for Shalach Monas? Have you decided on any nice gifts or anything that you're going to make up? I know I spoke to Naomi Nachman earlier, and she's going to make challah with some dips, which I suppose can take into Friday night as well. Have you thought of anything?
Well, I like to always include something from, you know, I have my online Judaica store, Modern Tribe. So this year we have these really cute little pouches that are shaped like hamantaschen. So I think I could take that and like fill it with some candy. I think it would be like super cute. So something like that. Yeah.
Okay. On that sweet note, I will leave you and say thank you once again for joining us.
I'm going to go make breakfast. It's breakfast time here. So thank you so much.
I'm going to bed.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Amy. So while we're on the subject of hamantaschen, or hamantaschen as some people call it, I don't know, I just go by what my father used to say, hamantaschen. So I shared a mushroom butternut and thyme hamantaschen in the latest edition of Jewish Life. And I'd like to share that recipe with you in case you haven't been able to get a copy of it. What we did was we needed to start 250 grams of butternut, peeled and cubed, 250 grams of mushrooms chopped, 1 teaspoon dried thyme, 1 teaspoon of crushed garlic, salt and pepper, and 1 egg for painting the pastry, and 450 grams of puff pastry. What we do is we preheat the oven to 180 and microwave the butternut until it's soft. It'll probably take you about 8 to 10 minutes. It can be steamed as well, but I wouldn't boil the butternut because it becomes too mushy and too watery and too soft. So, you know, it's too soft when it's mashed. So then once you've taken it out the microwave or you steamed it, mash the butternut until it's soft. Fry the mushrooms in a touch of oil with thyme and garlic until the liquid from the mushroom imparts and has evaporated. Combine the mushrooms with the butternut, salt and pepper. Then you unroll the pastry on a slightly dusted surface. You'll dust the surface with flour, but don't roll the pastry out. You don't want it to be thin pastry. You want it to puff up beautifully. And then you cut the pastry into circles. You can use a glass or a cookie cutter or, you know, something round. And This also, it depends on the size of the hometation that you want, but I use the top of quite a big glass. Then you place a teaspoon or two into the center of your pastry, into the center of the pastry circle, and you draw up the sides, pinching it at 3 points. And then you coat the triangle with a little bit of egg, an egg wash, which is 1 egg with 2 tablespoons of water. And you bake it in your preheated oven on 180 until it's golden brown. And then what I did was also, before I put it in the oven, after I'd egged it, I put some seeds on, some sesame seeds, you know, to remind us of Queen Esther, who only ate seeds while she was in the palace. And that's the story for Purim. So, as I say, if you haven't got the New Jewish Life, go out and get it. You've got lovely free recipes and lovely things to read. And that's the end of my show. And thank you, Craig, and thank you to everybody that has joined me. And look forward to speaking again soon.